Welcome to First Bite, our Detroit Lions preview podcast that's nice and mini-sized for just a drive home or maybe a drive to work. My name's Jeremy Reisman. I will be adequate hosting this week while Chris is just listening, producing at the moment. With me, as always, we have Ryan Matthews. How are you doing today, Ryan?
I'm doing wonderful. Can't wait for some Thursday night football. Big NFC West matchup.
Well, by the time you're listening to this, we already know the results of said Thursday night game, which probably was horrible. But with us today to talk some Falcons, because we're Lions-Falcons this week, big NFC matchup, is Kevin Knight from The Falcoholic. Kevin, thanks for joining us today. How are you doing?
Doing good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. I think the first thing I want to tackle with this matchup is injuries, because the Lions didn't really have to deal with too many injuries in the first 2 weeks of the season, but now they do, and the Falcons have a couple of injuries of their own that are pretty significant. Kevin, why don't you run down the situation for the Falcons right now?
Okay, yeah, so there's three main injuries that the Falcons are dealing with right now. The most high-profile one is obviously Vic Beasley, who was the NFL sack leader in 2016 with 15 and a half sacks. He's a big one. He's dealing with a slight hamstring tear, so his ETA is about a month at this point. Obviously, that means he will not be playing at all in this game. The other one that's more long-term is defensive tackle Courtney Upshaw, more of a rotational player. He has some kind of like ankle injury. He's been ruled out for this week. Hopefully it's not a severe long-term thing. But the third one, and this one might be one of the bigger ones, is right tackle Ryan Schrader's in the concussion protocol. I suppose it's technically possible he could clear by Sunday. I don't think it's likely. If he can't play, you know, that's a big loss, because the Falcons, he's arguably one of the best right tackles in the NFL, so he's a big loss if he can't play.
Let's talk a little bit about the guys that might be replacing all these players. One of the big names, especially along the defensive line, is rookie Tackris McKinley. He won, I think, everyone's hearts during the NFL draft when he just went on that crazy rant. How's he been looking so far, and is he ready to take on a full starter's worth of snaps?
Yeah, well, in the preseason, he blew up pretty much every team he played. He was one of the most productive rookies as far as edge rushers in the preseason. He hasn't gotten a ton of snaps in the regular season. Against Chicago, he had very limited snaps, mostly because the Bears ran a lot of base, like run schemes, and he was mainly a factor on nickel downs. Against the Packers, he got a pretty decent amount of work once Vic Beasley went out, and he was solid. I mean, he created some pressure. He's a little raw still, but he has a high, like extremely high effort. Like he's a guy that's going to go out there and give his all on every single play. There was a really impressive play against the Bears where he was rushing from the opposite side of the formation where the run went, and the run got slowed down slightly, and he was able to chase it all the way around the formation and make the tackle eventually. So he's very quick off the snap. He's got a pretty good bull rush. So I think he'll be fine. I'm not expecting him to be Vic Beasley necessarily, but I think Tack is a better player against the run. Not quite as fluid an athlete as Beasley, whereas Beasley could drop into coverage in a pinch. And, you know, he's actually fairly good there, even though they don't really use him there because he's a great pass rusher. But I think Tack will be fine. I'm not exactly sure if they're going to kind of line him up on Greg Robinson and really see if he can take advantage of that matchup, or if they'll kind of sacrifice him on Ricky Wagner on the other side. Obviously Ricky Wagner's a much better player than Robinson at this point, but the Falcons have options on either side. So I'm interested to see where he ends up playing.
I'm ready to give my life for Tack McKinley. Like, you know, Jeremy mentioned how he won everybody over at the draft. Like, I was willing to take a bullet for Tack McKinley.
Yeah.
And from everything I'm hearing, is it the Falcons just lose like a little bit of versatility? Because you said, you know, Vic Beasley, you know, is such a great pass rusher. He has the ability to drop back in coverage in a pinch, like you said. Do they just lose a little bit of versatility? I mean, is there any, like, what's the big takeaway for the Lions, I guess, from the Lions perspective, having McKinley in there instead of Beasley?
It just gives the Falcons a little bit less of a rotation. Dan Quinn loves to rotate his players to keep them fresh. Mm-hmm. So they're just down one guy. And, you know, Beasley is obviously the most talented pure pass rusher on the team. So they lose a little bit of punch there. But Beasley almost exclusively lines up on the right side. So he would have been going against, or I guess technically be the left side, but he would be going against the right tackle. And Tack probably would have had an opportunity to go against Robinson. So either they'll move Tack over to Vic's side and have him go against Wagner, or he'll play on the left side and they'll move someone like Adrian Claiborne over. And Claiborne's fine. I would say he's an above average pass rusher. Just they really like to rotate, and that'll be the big loss there. It's just, like you said, some versatility, some fresh legs, you know, not quite as deep in that rotation without Beasley there.
And you mentioned Adrian Claiborne, who also, I think, won the hearts of Lions fans last weekend when he laid on that huge hit on Aaron Rodgers. I think he's a guy that the Lions definitely still have to worry about. And that's the thing with this Falcons defense, is they are kind of deep at pass rusher, but now, like you mentioned, a little bit thinner on the defensive line. Let's talk a little bit more about the right tackle situation. As you mentioned before, who's in line to replace the injured player there, and what's the prospect looked on him?
Well, there's two options. The Falcons sign Austin Pastore in the offseason to be the swing tackle, and he took a while to recover from his offseason pectoral muscle surgery. So he's only just now back to full health. He wasn't quite ready for last week. They held him out. But as of this week, he is ready. So he could technically be an option there. At the end of the offseason, they traded for Ty Sambrello from the Broncos, who Falcons fans remember clearly from when Vic Beasley abused him for about three sacks against the Broncos last season. So we were all very skeptical of that decision. But Sambrello was the active swing tackle against the Packers, and he came in and he was solid. The sacks that were given up by the right side were more miscommunication sacks on some stunts and twists. But as far as pure blocking goes, Sambrello is a good run blocker. He has the athleticism that the Falcons want from their tackles. He can get out and block on the edge. Pass protection is really a concern with him, but either one of those guys, neither one of them is going to be Ryan Schrader. You know, Schrader's obviously one of the best right tackles in the NFL. He basically gives the Falcons the ability to not have to keep their tight ends in blocking unless they really want to, because they've got those two bookends in Schrader and Matthews. But, I mean, there hasn't been any, like, they haven't said anything about Pastore coming in and taking that spot. I think we all expected Pastore might be the favorite at that swing tackle spot after the offseason. But with Sambrello performing fairly well against the Packers, you know, we'll see if he gets the snap there. But it'll be one of those two. I think it'll still be Sambrello, but Pastore is, you know, he has about 35, 40 starts under his belt, just about an average solid offensive tackle. So we'll see, you know, if Ziggy Ansah starts abusing Sambrello and we get, you know, Broncos flashbacks to Vic Beasley, they might move Pastore in instead. But yeah, it'll be one of those two guys.
All right, let's move quickly over to the Lions injuries. The big news is obviously first round rookie linebacker Jared Davis. As of Thursday, he still hasn't practiced as he's continuing to go through concussion protocol. Looking less and less likely that he's going to play. Obviously, that's a huge deal for Detroit. Ryan, how do you see that playing out on Sunday if he can't go?
You know, we saw a little bit of it, or the ramifications of Davis not being in there on Monday night when he had to leave. Tyre Whitehead moved back over to Mike, which I think we're all in agreement that that's just not the position for Tyre Whitehead to thrive. So with him in there, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not they go with somebody like Paul Warlow over Jalen Reeves-Maben. Mm-hmm. I'm still kind of up in the air of whether or not that was just a decision because it was late in the game, or maybe it was, Warlow a little bit less steady in pass coverage.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
Sure.
Terrell Austin talked about it a little bit during his press conference on Thursday and said that specifically Jalen Reeves-Maben, that they knew the Giants were going to be in kind of a passing formation, mm-hmm. and they thought Jalen Reeves-Maben was kind of the better coverage option at that point. So I think you're onto something there.
Great. Awesome. I didn't listen to Austin's press conference, so now I sound like a genius. So, but yeah, so I'm not sure if you're going to see a mix of them, if they're going to, you know, they have certain packages for either, you know, running downs or passing downs, whatever it may be. So I'm just not looking forward at all to seeing the Lions defense without Davis, because he had such a good game on Monday night. And I think the ramifications of him being out are going to be felt thoroughly throughout the rest of the defense. But, you know, to add to Davis, Tavon Wilson, he was still out, did not practice with that shoulder injury. Could mean that we see a lot more Miles Killebrew. Jeremy, what about Travis Swanson?
Yeah, he's still dealing with an ankle injury. He did play through the entire game on Sunday, so there's reason to believe that maybe it's not that serious. But again, we're two-thirds of the way through practice, and he hasn't practiced once, so that's definitely a concern. Moving over to kind of how this affects the game, Kevin, how do you see things playing out if the Lions can't have Jared Davis and Tavon Wilson, two of their better run defenders on the defense? How does that play into the matchup against the Falcons?
Yeah, well, part of the Falcons' strength is that you don't really know what they're going to do on offense. Even if they line up with a fullback and two tight ends, they still might throw the ball just because they can. And, you know, I love Jerod Davis. He was one of my favorite players coming out. The Falcons weren't really in the market for a linebacker, but, you know, he's just such a solid player. I was really impressed with how he's played thus far throughout the season. But, you know, if you can't cover the running backs, the Falcons will eat you alive. I mean, they did. That's how they got Denver in Denver last season, early in the year, which is very, very difficult to do. That, you know, Denver last season, elite defense pretty much everywhere except their linebackers, and Tevin Coleman ate them alive. And that is very likely to be what you'll see, especially if the Falcons ever see Paul Warlow on the field. We're very familiar with Paul Warlow in Atlanta. We know him very well, and, you know, everyone loved Paul Warlow as a person, but they did not love Paul Warlow as a linebacker, and the Falcons will not hesitate to go after Warlow in the passing game. They will absolutely abuse him with Coleman and Austin Hooper and other matchups like that. So I would probably recommend you just go with Jalen Reeves-Maven in that situation, just because maybe Reeves-Maven has a chance to match up with Coleman. But yeah, if Davis is out, the Falcons will attack the linebackers relentlessly.
And going back to the Travis Swanson, the line center injury, Lions haven't had a ton of success running the ball as is, but obviously losing a center can have bigger implications than that. It's calling out pass protections, snap issues, stuff like that. Where do the Falcons stand in the middle of that defensive line, and how does that matchup, do you think, present itself if the Lions have to rely on Graham Glasgow, their former third-round pick?
Yeah, the Falcons are actually very deep in the middle of their defensive line. The defensive line as a whole has really improved this offseason. They signed Dontari Poe over from the Chiefs, and he slimmed down to about 330 when he used to play at around 345. So he's a threat as a pass rusher, not just as a run defender. He's looked really, really solid playing the nose for Atlanta. And then you have Grady Jarrett, who might be one of the overall most talented players on the defense, who, you know, he blew up the Patriots in the Super Bowl to 3 sacks. So if you have problems on the interior, that's going to be an issue for you. Jarrett is getting to play 3-tech more. He was actually playing 1-tech pretty much all of last season, even though he's a small defensive tackle. And he was having success there. He's incredibly technically sound and very athletic. So Dontari Poe and Grady Jarrett have been a big problem for some of the teams with weaker offensive interiors. And then the Falcons have a ton of depth there too. They've got guys like Jack Crawford, who came over from Dallas. He's looked pretty good. You know, sometimes Adrian Claiborne will line up on the interior. It's really the Falcons. If your center's out, that's going to be even a tougher draw for you, because, you know, with the Falcons losing Beasley, maybe you get a little relief on the edge. But yeah, they will definitely get you with the interior pressure if you have a weak interior line.
All right. I think that pretty much covers the injury side of things. I think we definitely have a better look at what that matchup's what those matchups might look like on Sunday. So we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about specific players, who we think might have breakout games, who we think might struggle, come through with some predictions, and maybe see if the Bears gave us a blueprint on how to beat the Falcons. That and more coming up next. Welcome back to First Bite, the Pride of Detroit preview podcast. We're here talking Falcons with Kevin Knight of the Falcoholic. One interesting thing about the Falcons schedule is that they're opening up their first three games against all NFC North opponents. And I'm really interested in to hear what you have to say about that first game on the road against the Bears, because Chicago was a dropped touchdown away from winning that game. What did the Bears prove that game? Did they prove anything? Did the Falcons just have a bad game? I mean, I watched it myself, and I'm still a little curious as to what happened, because it seemed like the Falcons were in control of that game for most of the game, but then suddenly they're the Bears were down in the red zone, 3-4 plays left to punch it in. They couldn't do it. Does that game worry you, or was that just kind of a one-off?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it was the field conditions. We saw at least 5 or 6 times Falcons players just fall over. And when you have such a dynamic offense like this and players trying to make those type of cuts, I mean, players like Tevin Coleman and Devonta Freeman that are making these cuts, they just fell over on a lot of plays. And, you know, if you slip and fall, that's no gain or a loss. That can stall an entire drive. So that was, I think, honestly, that had a lot to do with it. The Bears also had a good game plan, and I think their defense played really solid in that game. And I don't think the Falcons were necessarily prepared for Tariq Cohen. There just wasn't a ton of film on him. And it seemed like after halftime, they were able to kind of get him under control a little bit. But yeah, I mean, kudos to the Bears for a good game plan early in that. They kept it close. You know, obviously, I think this team is going to be a turf team. I think they're going to really light it up when they get to play on turf. But yeah, I mean, it was week one. You know, I think if you watched the Falcons at all last year, which no guarantee, I know you guys are in Detroit, but they struggled in week one against the Bucks last year too. They actually lost that game. And everyone was saying, oh, Shanahan still sucks and all this. And then they go on to, you know, have the 7th highest scoring offense of all time. So Sarkisian, the new offensive coordinator, it looked like he was kind of calling a more vanilla game plan, was a little bit easier for the team, maybe kind of getting his feet wet. So I'm not exactly sure what was the overall takeaway from that. But after watching the Falcons take out the Packers, you know, we're just not super, I'm not really super concerned about that game.
Yeah. Weird things definitely happen at Soldier Field. It's something that it's always my least favorite game of the season for the Lions, because something weird is bound to happen every year. And of course, last year the Lions lost that game. And then when they played the Bears at home, Stafford gets his finger injured. So can you just say something mean about the Bears for us?
Mike Glennon looks like Napoleon Dynamite.
Perfect.
He does. I'm sorry.
That's not even mean. That's just true. That's a fact. That's okay. Just like a fact.
So, I don't think that's a flattering thing to say, though.
No, absolutely not. It isn't. So I guess it's kind of mean, but I mean, the truth hurts.
It does. It hurts sometimes.
So, I mean, from what I'm hearing about that Bears game, I mean, you talked about Tariq Cohen. Do you think that the Falcons defense is at all susceptible to, you know, getting gashed by receiving backs? Because the Lions definitely have those. Like, I'm looking for reasons to be optimistic as a Lions fan at this point. Like,
yeah. Last year, the Falcons, the biggest weakness that they had was covering receiving backs. And they've struggled with it a little bit this season. I think part of Tariq Cohen was they just weren't prepared for him. Like, I think they were expecting Jordan Howard, and they played Jordan Howard extremely well. And then Tariq Cohen caught him off guard. And I think, you know, they gave up a lot of yards through the air to Ty Montgomery, but I think they actually played Montgomery pretty well throughout the game. And then they gave up one big catch, like a 30-yard catch, 40-yard catch to him on like a blown assignment. They did some kind of weird blitz where they blitzed like 3 guys. And Deion Jones just forgot to pick up Montgomery when he went out wide. So I think that was more a mental error than anything. You know, obviously those still count. But yeah, I mean, I think you can hurt the Falcons with your receiving backs. So that could be a potential area where the Lions could take advantage of if they can get Theo Riddick going.
And what about bigger receivers? Because the Lions do have a couple in Marvin Jones Jr. and in Kenny Galladay. He took a little bit. I wouldn't say he took a step back in week two. The game plan was just obviously much different than the Cardinals game. But I fully anticipate this game against the Falcons this week to be, in the easiest way to describe it, a shootout. How do the Falcons defensive backs, how do they deal with bigger receivers?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're fine against bigger receivers. They're kind of big receiver specialist. Jalen Collins, he's suspended for like the first 10 games of the season. So that hurts them a little bit. Collins had kind of fallen out of favor in training camp anyway. So I'm not exactly sure he would have been playing. But yeah, I mean, I think the Falcons are fine against big receivers. I know Robert Alford, the number two corner, struggled with guys like Mike Evans, but he's like a freak as far as his physicality.
For sure.
Yeah, so I mean, the Falcons, what they're probably going to do as far as their corners is they have three solid starters. I would say Desmond Trufant, you know, an elite shutdown corner, and then Robert Alford is like a average cornerback one. So he, you know, obviously as a cornerback two, he's a pretty above average cornerback two. And Brian Poole, I think, is just a solid above average slot corner. So they're all pretty solid guys. I think, you know, they'll probably play sides. So Trufant will probably stay on one side, Alpha will stay on the other, and then Poole will play the slot. So it's possible that maybe you guys could have some success trying to line up Galladay on Poole. I mean, Poole's a little bit smaller of a defensive back. But yeah, I mean, I think that the Lions receivers are good enough that they'll get theirs. I mean, they'll get some yards and stuff like that. But Trufant is going to shut down whoever he's playing. So I expect that the Lions will probably rotate their guys on Trufant, you know, to get more people involved. Sure. And I think Alford probably matches up better against someone like Tate, because Alford's probably the quickest as far as timed speed on the team. But yeah, I mean, I don't think there'll be a big win one way or the other as far as the Lions receivers. I think that'll just be a good battle. You know, it'll be tough, but I don't think there's a big weakness in the Falcons secondary to exploit.
Let's move on to the opposite side of the field, because I think if you're a Lions fan, your biggest worry about this game is somehow trying to stop Matt Ryan and the Falcons offense. Is there anything besides, you know, the typical pressure Matt Ryan that can slow this offense down?
Yeah, if you can shut down the run, that kind of caps what their potential is. Because if you can't stop the run, I don't think there's a way to stop this offense. If you can't stop the run at all, and Devonta Freeman and Coleman are gashing you, the Falcons will eat you alive. They'll just run the ball as much as they want to, and then they'll hit you with the play action deep shot. And if you have to go to base against the Falcons, Julio Jones is going to eat. So it's really hard to stop this team if you can't stop the run. I think that getting pressure on Ryan is the key to slowing down the passing game. But if you can't stop the run, that becomes really difficult to do as well. So, you know, with Ryan Schrader out, you guys have an opportunity to take advantage of probably Tyson Brelo. Does Ziggy Ansah, does he usually line up against the left or the right tackle?
Almost exclusively the left, I think.
Yeah. So,
but they do like to move like everyone around quite a bit. Like sometimes he'll drop back in coverage, sometimes he'll rotate inside. But I don't really see him against the right tackle very often, if ever.
Sometimes they'll even go with that funky front where like both the ends are playing off the line, almost kind of like linebackers. A way. So they'll mix up some funky stuff like that, but I have a specific question about Schrader. I know the Falcons are so, a lot of their offense is predicated on those running backs. And you talked about them in the running game, but they're almost really known for their ability to catch the ball out of the backfield or screen plays or whatnot. Is that something that the Falcons like to play to the right side? Can they play to the left and the right side? I mean, I'm just wondering whether or not Schrader's injury is going to affect that in any way.
Yeah, I mean, I would say outside of Alex Mack that Schrader was probably the most talented run blocker as far as like power style stuff. But yeah, they can go either way. I would say the left side of the line is overall better with the young player Wes Schweitzer at right guard. He's still kind of getting the hang of things. I mean, he struggled really badly against the Bears in week one, but he looked fine against the Packers. So he's kind of an up and down proposition at this point. But the left side with Levitre and Matthews is very effective, particularly with the stretch stuff. Matthews is exceptional when he gets out on the move. He can take linebackers out in space. He can do all that stuff that you like. So yeah, I mean, they're fine running to either side. I think with Schrader out, they'll probably do it less because now you've got the potential weakness of Schweitzer at right guard and Sambrylo out there at right tackle. But, you know, I don't think they'll necessarily shy away from the right side, just that they probably won't emphasize it like they used to.
All right, I'm desperately searching of ways where the Lions can win this game, and one possible way that could maybe tip the scales is special teams. We saw Jamal Agnew return that 88-yard punt on Monday night, seal the game for the Giants. Mm-hmm. How are the Atlanta special teams in general, both coverage and return style?
And tell us about Andre Roberts, too.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I think the coverage is fine. The Falcons special teams gets a lot of penalties. I'm not exactly sure why. They just always seem to commit penalties. Nothing like severe, but like just little 5-10 yard penalties on like every single return, it seems like. But I would say the coverage unit is pretty solid. They have a really good punter in Matt Bosher that can give the kick a lot of hang time and make it tough to return. As far as returning go, I mean, they've been fine. Andre Roberts has been fine. He had a really nice return in week one. He had like a 60-yard return on the opening kickoff in week one. And he's been fine. I mean, he hasn't had a ton of opportunities to return punts because teams really have seemed to kind of kick it high on purpose. But yeah, I mean, they're fine on special teams. I wouldn't say that it's a weakness or a huge strength for them.
All right. I think it's time to get to some predictions like the people want. At this point, why don't we just go to any sort of predictions you have? It doesn't have to be a score prediction, just what you think will happen. One thing you think will happen on Sunday afternoon. Ryan, why don't you kick us off?
All right. So, yeah, the segment essentially is things we think we know are going to happen on Sunday. And one thing that I think I know is that if the Lions are trailing by 2 scores heading into the fourth quarter, it's time to start thinking about week four. I really don't see a way in which the Lions can come back from 2 scores down in the fourth quarter. This Falcons offense, it feels like the Falcons offense could keep up with anybody. So if you're not in the position to have the ball on the last possession and be within a score, I'm at a loss, especially for how this Lions team is. I with Jared Davis potentially being out, no Tavon Wilson. If the Falcons can run the ball, that opens up the play action. And that's just a whole bunch of scary, messy thoughts running through my head. So I think I know that if the Falcons are up by 2 scores, I'm going to be ready to, we can hashtag start writing.
Well, you realize what you're saying, though, right? You're saying that the team that was most notorious for its comebacks in the fourth quarter last year is not going to have a chance against the team most notorious for giving up a big fourth quarter lead.
I look, that's bold. I said what I said. Okay.
All right, Kevin, why don't you hit us with the one thing you think you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think if Davis is for sure out, that the Falcons receiving running backs, aka Tevin Coleman, I think Coleman will have a huge game. If Paul Werlow's ever on the field, the Falcons will just go after him immediately. And this is coming from a place of love. Like, I mean, he's such a nice guy off the field. Like, I hate to ever like talk bad about Paul Werlow, but he cannot cover Tevin Coleman. Like, there's not very many linebackers that can. So I think that will be a big mismatch if the Falcons, if Jared Davis is in fact out for this game. Yeah, I mean, as far as score predictions, I think it'll be a pretty good game. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a blowout or anything like that. How I usually have it is the Falcons seem to kind of stay close early and then they kind of pull away at the end. So I'll say that the Falcons take it, and get ahead on like a late score. And Lions kind of catch back up a little bit at the end, maybe final score something like 30-24 or something like that. Like it's like a 1-score game.
Okay, interesting. The over under right now is set at 51. So I think I'm ready to that is awfully high, but I think I see this one being a shootout in all the sense.
Yeah, I think that's what it seems to trend. And sometimes when everyone says it's going to be a shootout, it ends up being the exact
14
opposite.
14-10.
Right. Yeah. But the one thing I think I know is that Matthew Stafford is going to air the ball the F out. We saw him throw 4 second half passes in Monday night. That's not going to happen again. I think Stafford throws
40 in the second
I think
half.
Exactly. I think Stafford could throw the ball. I think he throws the ball at least 10 more times than Matt Ryan does in this game, because I really do not believe in this Lions running game yet. And I think they're going to be playing from behind kind of early in this one. So I'm not saying that the Lions are going to lose this one, but they're definitely going to have to be playing like from behind for at least the majority of this game. Yeah. All right.
Wait, before we go, I got one question.
Okay.
Should I start Amir Abdullah in fantasy this week? Because I had David Johnson and he got hurt, so I need somebody.
Is it PPR or standard?
It's PPR, yeah. Full PPR.
I mean, maybe as a flex, definitely not as RB1 or RB2. I don't know. I'd have to know the rest of your roster. But
well, he would have to be my RB2 because I literally have no one else, so.
look at the waiver wire, my friend. You can find our waiver wire report on prideofdetroit.com.
There you go.
Good plug.
Real quick, one other thing that I think I know is that I will definitely be hopping on the Pride of Detroit Twitter, and at some point I will be posting the "Way to go, Paul."
When Paul Warlow messes up.
Yes.
All right, Kevin, why don't you give a minute to plug all your stuff, where the people can find you on the internet. If you have any articles about this game or anything else that Lions fans might interesting, plug them.
Yeah, well, my name is Kevin Knight, obviously. You can follow me on Twitter at Falcoholic Kevin. I do the Falcoholics Facebook live show. We do a show Thursday, so it would be tonight, but it will probably be yesterday for you guys when you're listening. So tonight we're going to have Michael Payton, actually from Pride of Detroit, on the live show tonight. He'll be coming on to talk about this game with us. I have several articles coming out about the game. So tomorrow, Friday, I'll have Falcons to watch in that game. So if you want to see some of the Falcons players, we touched on a bunch of them tonight, but some of the Falcons players to keep an eye on. Fantasy article tomorrow, where I'm probably going to say don't start Amir Abdullah based on you guys' advice. On Saturday I do a stats preview. So it'll look at where each team, like both teams are statistically at this point in the season, as far as like total yardage and offense and defensive major statistics, and do a little comparison, look at where these teams are. And that'll be on Saturday. So yeah, those might be interesting to you guys, but otherwise I just write a lot of stuff about the Falcons. And, you know, sadness about the Super Bowl, that sort of thing.
All right, Kevin. Well, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it. There's a lot of really good information. I think I'm fully ready for this game. Now I'm amped up and ready to go. Thanks to Chris Perfett for not hosting the show, but producing the show in the background. I know it's killing him not being able to talk while we're all talking. But thanks for listening, everyone, to First Bite. We will see you Sunday night for some post-game coverage. Until then, enjoy the game.